Hey everyone, I'm Beck Susan Gill.
And I'm Jade Lovell.
And this is How'd You Become So Awesome, the podcast where we talk to amazing people and try to understand the behaviors and philosophies that help people move from average to awesome.
In this week's show, we're talking to award-winning New York-based independent filmmaker Naftali Rudder. Naftali first came to our attention because of his successful Kickstarter campaign to fund his upcoming film, Wild Animals. And the film is about two kids hiding out in the aftermath of a high school shooting.
Naftali's actually got several film projects on the go, and he's the director at Waterbound Pictures, which is a commercial production studio that champions social change causes.
Naftali is one of the most thoughtful and introspective working artists that we've ever spoken to on How to Become So Awesome. We started off talking about Wild Animals and how he got the idea for the script.
And then we move on to the process of creating, the challenges of bringing grand visions into existence, his advice to upcoming filmmakers, and also the best ways to crowdfund projects. For any creators and makers out there, I think that you're really going to enjoy this conversation. Welcome to the show, Naftali. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Now, you're currently doing post-production for Wild Animals. Can you tell us a bit about the film?
So Wild Animals is a movie that that I decided to make because of the what I think is, you know, an epidemic of school shootings in the United States. Ever since basically Columbine, every time another school shooting happened, I always felt like I was processing it from the standpoint of what is it like to be there. I kept on getting into sort of those microscopic moments of being in the shoes of the children.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the actual plot of the film? What happens in it?
The movie starts out with a teenager in the bathroom who is noticeably shocked, affected, and physically strained. And we see him go through a series of different emotional ups and downs in this bathroom. He clearly doesn't want to leave the bathroom for whatever reason. He's kind of talking to himself and then discovers that there's another much younger boy hiding in one of the bathroom stalls. The older boy ends up convincing the younger boy, who's standing on top of the toilet hiding because he thinks there's a wild animal in the school, to come out of the stall. And what happens next is something that you and everyone else, and maybe even I, will have to find out once the movie's done.
It sounds so compelling. Naftali, you're an independent filmmaker, but what does it mean on a day-to-day basis?
What defines life as a filmmaker is this constant back and forth between being totally alone in your or with a very small amount of people, either in post-production or writing or pre-production, and then going into the masses and being on set with a lot of people and being engaged with a lot of people. And that's what that's really what I enjoy. I love that. I think that all of us who do this have this, have the genetic makeup of being at the same time a loner, you know, somebody who needs a lot of alone time, and then somebody who loves just being around people, or at least can deal with being around people in order to get the dream done.
That does sound like a lot of filmmakers we know. What are some of the biggest challenges that you've faced, and how have you overcome them?
It's challenging to try and bring things into existence that don't exist, whether it's a baby you make or a movie or a song. The process of creating is a tremendously challenging thing. I think that, and then when you bring in the fact that you're trying to support yourself with these creations, or support yourself in another way while you're creating, that brings in a whole other, problem. But I think that, I guess there have been different challenges at different stages of my career, I guess. And I think, you know, at certain stages of my career, the challenge was just finishing something. Michelle Gondry, you know, said one of the best, like, pieces of advice. It's very simple, but, like, I remember when I was in my 20s kind of struggling, he said, I read something that somebody asked Michelle Gondry, you know, what is your best advice for filmmakers? And he just said, make something and finish it and then start making something else. And I think that especially if you are an independent filmmaker who is not under a lot of structure, giving yourself structure is really important, or just forcing yourself to finish something and get it out there and then, you know, and then start making something else is really important, and just making things.
I totally understand where you're coming from, and I think it's a big challenge for so many filmmakers and people who, especially if you've had a life where you've been, you know, there's some boss has been making sure that you come into the workplace at 9 and you go home at 5, and you've got expectations around you. Often when you become independent, whether that's through film or in any other field, it can be really difficult to actually finish work, because the fun stuff is the ideation and the production of it. And then when it comes down to the hard slog of actually editing it and shipping it out there, that can be such a deterrent.
We actually have our own YouTube channel, which is, you know, science filmmaking. And so we have that challenge where we try and make release a video every week. And because we're independent and that we don't have a boss telling us to do it, we often make compromises because other things come up in life. So we can relate to that, is that there's no structure. So yeah, the need to just put yourself under a deadline and publish something.
Yeah, I think what it really was about was basically like creating the voice of a boss, or, you know, a commander, you know, who like you have to create a fake boss who's like, you need to make this so that you have this like thing on your shoulder. I think other people are better about that, but for me, like, just you have to kind of externalize it in the same way that, you know, if you have to turn in a book report for the teacher, or if you have something else that you have to get in for some job where you do have a boss, you know, it's something external that just has to be done. And for me, that makes it really, that simplifies it a little bit. And just makes it like, okay, you know, I gotta make this. There's no doubt about it. It's not inside me. It's outside me.
Yeah, I love that. Create a fake boss.
Good advice.
Good advice. Yeah. So
I was just gonna say, one other challenge that I thought of.
Oh yes, please share.
I think another challenge of being a filmmaker, especially because filmmaking requires so many people to do it, is that, or at least to make the kind of movies I want to make, is that I think that especially me, like, I have I tend toward being a pretty extreme person, and I think early on, and also just because filmmaking is in certain ways such an extreme medium and such an can tend toward being a very extreme life, sometimes, you know, to dangerous or hazardous or tragic ends. It's a big challenge to keep the balance, to both keep the balance between between your just regular life of having fun and exploring and your life of working, because, you know, for people like me, I just have a tendency to work all the time. But also within the filmmaking life, there is a really important balance that you have to have, because you can't just write all the time. You gotta hustle a little bit. I mean, I think that, you know, 99% of all of the great, incredible people that we know about, you know, from Charlie Chaplin to Pedro Almodovar, have a little bit of hustler in them. And I think early on, I didn't really acknowledge that sometimes it is important to, you know, go to parties and stuff.
Yeah, and as you said, it can be difficult for people who, you know, may perhaps be a little bit introverted.
I think it was Ted Turner who said, early to bed, early to rise, work like hell and advertise. And I think a lot of people are totally willing to work like hell, but not necessarily willing to do the advertising and the hustling that you say. I think it was Ted Turner, but I know Arnold Schwarzenegger quotes him a lot, so I got it from Arnie.
Okay, nice. Yeah. He's really short. Did you know that, Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Yeah, I heard he lies about his height, that he says he's like 6'1" or 6'2", but he's like 5'10" or something.
He's really short. He wears big boots.
Jade is obsessed with Arnold Schwarzenegger. She's read his biography, and Arnold is quoted much often in our household here.
Nice.
Okay, so this section is called The Final Five, where we've got five questions submitted by podcast listeners.
Are you ready for the final five questions?
I am ready for the final five. Oh, yeah.
Awesome. Chloe in London asks, what was your big break as a filmmaker and how did it happen?
I think most filmmakers would probably agree with me that in reality, there isn't a big break per se where you kind of like open a door and suddenly it's all easy from there. I think there are moments where you feel like you've advanced or you're happy, but then you kind of go back to you go back to work. I feel like my big break actually was just starting out with and growing with the support system that I have. There are moments that where you feel like you take a big step up and that doors got open, but I wouldn't call it a big break. Like, for example, when I left New York City for a period of time and I came back, I didn't know whether I was going to stay in New York or move back to the West Coast. And I ended up just calling up a buddy who I knew was assistant editing on a big mini series for PBS. And he was like, oh yeah, we need another assistant editor. Do you want to come interview? And so I ended up going to interview and getting that job and working on that job for about a year and a half. And on that job, there were, you know, it was like it was 3 2-hour episodes. So there were, I think, 6 to 8 producers working on it. And Max, my buddy, and I were the assistant editors, and we were really like in the middle of everything. We were the only ones that were watching all the footage. We were constantly talking to all these producers, most of which were really awesome people. And that was kind of a moment where a lot of different forces combined, both in terms of like the content of what we were watching that was very inspiring, and the people that we were working with that were really inspiring. And it allowed me to be around people that were able to sort of recognize my talent, that introduced me to a lot of cool people, but also I think gave me some confidence, because I think one of the biggest breaks you can have is just like getting into a place where you get feedback that you're not totally worthless and that maybe you might like have a chance to, you know, you might be able to do this. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's so important to finish things. If you don't finish your films, then you don't get the feedback. And every time you finish it, you know, you get more feedback, and it's part of, it's how you grow. And that's why we're doing this, because we want to make things and finish them.
Such a great answer. Now, Allison in New York City asks, there was a famous artist, we're not sure whether it's Van Gogh or Da Vinci, but he said the biggest struggle isn't creating something, it's learning to create again and again and again. So what is it within you that keeps you creating, and how do you nurture this?
I think it's within me and without me. Everything inspires me, that, you know, everything in life, from the light to the dark, inspires me. And then there is also just something genetically in me, almost in the same way that, you know, someone can be addicted to smoking cigarettes, or addicted to drinking coffee, that just makes me need to keep making things. For me, it's not really a challenge to be inspired. It's more of a challenge actually to figure out what to make and how to boil something down to a story, to figure out what story to tell. I think one of the biggest things that makes me create again and again and again is just when I have interactions with amazing people. Like yesterday, I took our camera in to be fixed, and I was talking to this incredible guy at Aerie, who's one of the main camera wizards there. And he was talking about, he was trying to figure out where, what might have caused a light leak on one of our rolls of film. He was trying to figure out whether it had happened when the film was being loaded or when the film was being unloaded. And he was trying to figure out, based on what side of the frame the light leak was on. And suddenly I started thinking about, oh, maybe this could be used in a murder mystery, partially because I'm listening to Serial right now, as everybody else in America is. And, and suddenly I didn't really care that there was a light leak on our film. I was like, wow, I'm so glad I'm having this conversation with this guy, because this is really f-ing interesting, and maybe I can use this in something.
That's so true. I found out yesterday from someone who was really bloody interesting that that's what Serial was. I hadn't heard of it until yesterday, and I was so intrigued. So I can't wait to actually hear I get to listen to 10 episodes, I think.
It's definitely the best free thing in the history of the world, whatever you want to say about it.
That's a big call. Question number 3 is from Luke in Sydney, and he asks, what's the secret to creating a winning Kickstarter campaign?
I do think the very basic secret is that, depending on how much money you're trying to raise, you need to have at least one person who's willing to sit in front of the computer, possibly with a diaper, or so they don't have to go to the bathroom for the duration of your entire Kickstarter campaign, aside from sleeping. Because basically, like, FaceTime with your computer, Facebook, email, and all of the madness of social media that can sometimes be incredible, is really, you know, what created the winning Kickstarter campaign for me. I didn't actually wear a diaper, but sometimes
it, but you were very responsive. Jade and I, yeah, both backed your Kickstarter campaign, and we both got personalized messages within, you know, it didn't take you very long, which, I mean, as someone who's supported many different Kickstarters, it's something that you really appreciate when you know that the artist is sitting behind there reading personally, you know, each contribution and taking the time to thank people.
Yeah, thanks. I'm glad you appreciated that. And I think it just gets tougher and tougher the the more and more money you're trying to raise. Cause I think it is really important, you know, as in everything, to be able to keep jumping back and forth between the micro and the macro, and making sure that each backer, whoever they are, feels how important it is that they contributed to your campaign, but then also being able to have other people to strategize with and think about the big picture, because, you know, every day you or every time you post, you want to try to say something a little bit different. You want to not like bombard, you know, the people with just the same shit every single day. And you want to try to be gracious. I mean, I think the other thing about it is you really have to think about it as an advertising campaign. And to that end, an advertising campaign is a lot better when it's really planned out, when the message is very, very clear, and when you're not doing it just by the seat of your pants. And I think, you know, in the case of Wild Animals, you know, it felt like we were a little bit doing it by the seat of our pants, but I think I had a lot of people to bounce ideas off of.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, seeing people's Kickstarter campaigns, you're exactly right. It is an advertising campaign. It's how you get the word of mouth out these days, is giving people a chance to join the conversation, to join the movement. Now we've got a question from Tim in DC, and he wants to, now we've kind of already discussed advice to independent filmmakers, which he kind of just said is start something and finish it. But should people who want to become filmmakers, should they start with a short and then work their way up to features? What's your take on this?
There are 1,001 paths to becoming a feature filmmaker. And I think that's something that's both comforting and confusing, but ultimately comforting, because what it means is you just have to do whatever you feel like is the truest thing to what kind of storyteller you are. And if you have the resources to make a feature film, and you feel just so deeply like you need to make a feature film, then go for it. I think that the important thing is to A, be considering your history, considering, you know, how much you've lived, and whether if you're a young person, I think young people, especially me, you know, like I felt like right when I came out of college, like I wanted to like make a feature film right away, you know, and I was 22 years old and I wrote a feature film, but I didn't make it, and it was sort of a big mess. And I think there's a big sort of back and forth between to what extent you have enough life experience to make a deep story, and to what extent it might be better to make a short and wait. But it's different for everybody. And I think the biggest thing is to not get, to consider that once you finish whatever you make, it needs to get out there, and consider that you need to stay alive amidst all this stuff. But I will say that I have a feature film that I'm making right now that doesn't really lend itself well to making a short that relates to it. But I think if you do have a film that itself really well to making a short that relates to it, it's tremendously valuable, especially now, because it's so easy to make a short, and even easier want to, you know, distribute it quickly and not wait, try and premiere it at a big film festival. You could put it on Vimeo and get a lot of attention, hypothetically.
The last question in the final five is from Jemima in New York, and she asks, your film stars a child and a teenager. What was it like directing young people?
It was amazing, because the two guys we had in our film are just two super, super talented people. it was challenging. I think when you're working with anyone, but especially kids, preparation is really good, because I think that our film benefited from the fact that Brian and Peyton, our two actors, had been through a lot of rehearsals together, and they really knew each other and felt comfortable with each other and there was a lot of fun between them, even though the film we were making was not really a fun film. Having Brian be older than Peyton really helped, because he helped sort of, you know, guide him, and sometimes, you know, he helped keep him in line a little bit.
One of the boys who was in the film, his dad wrote as a response to our question, he wanted to hear the podcast. So I know they'll both be listening, and it sounds like they were really engaged in the process with you.
So a shout out to all of the cast and crew of Wild Animals.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I will say that too. I mean, thank you for reminding me that, although I never forget it. But I mean, one of the most important things, I think, there are a lot of crazy stage parents out there, and neither Peyton nor Brian has crazy stage parents. I mean, it's the complete opposite of that. And to have the support of the parents, both in terms of, like, I mean, especially on this film, supporting the material of the film, but also, you know, supporting their kids in a functional, balanced way is really, really important. It's really, really important.
For a film like this, it's a really serious film for young actors, so definitely. Now, we've only just been able to scratch the surface of this project, but for people who want to learn more about Wild Animals or about your work, where can they find you online?
The best place right now to go to learn more is my website, is my company's website, which is waterboundpictures.com.
We'll put a link to Waterbound Pictures in the show notes for awesome. Anyone who's interested in checking
Thank
it
you.
Out.
You're also on Twitter as well, and you tweet quite often.
Yes. Yeah. You can. My Twitter is @TheRealNaftali.
Well, that wraps up the show, but thank you so much for joining us and for talking to us about Wild Animals. We're super excited to see the trailer or the short. Looking forward to keeping informed through the Kickstarter page, which is where
you know,
there's all the updates.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It was great talking to you.
So that brings us to the end. Thanks to all our listeners for tuning in, whether that's on iTunes, SoundCloud, or our YouTube channel.
We've got in-depth show notes on our website, which is didsomeonesayscience.com, and you can click the podcast tab up the top. If you guys haven't checked it out already, Did Someone Say Science is Beck and I's full-time job, and you could call it science filmmaking, where we talk about important issues in the science field.
It's actually probably best described as science YouTubing, to get technical. But if you wanted to see our faces as well as hear our voices, you guys should definitely check it out.
If you're on iTunes, please click the subscribe button and also leave us a comment, because that helps us make a better show. If you've got anyone that's awesome that you think we should interview, let us know. I'm on Twitter @JadeLovell, and Beck is @BeckSusanGill.
Thanks so much for joining us, guys. We wish you the happiest of holidays, and see you on the next episode of How'd You Become So Awesome?